Well, welcome to SaaS Blast, Accelerating Your Financial Journey. I'm your host, Carla McRae. And of course, SaaS Blast is really an episode on taking intentional and strategic actions to expedite your progress toward achieving your financial goals. Today, we're going to spend a little bit of time navigating the tax landscape specifically, the federal compliance considerations for the SaaS industry. And I have asked back Jim Laham, senior tax partner at Berman Hopkins, one of my mentors, to help us through this conversation. And I'll bring Jim in here in a second, but wanted you to know a little bit about Jim. He's the managing partner at Berman Hopkins for 16 years, prior experience with KPMG, the 3M company in Deloitte. He authors three books. He's currently working on his fourth, which is just incredible. I can't fathom the idea of sitting down and taking the time to write a book myself. Graduated as valedictorian from Loyola in New Orleans, and he's happily married to Michelle, one great daughter, two grandkids, cool son-in-law, loves to travel, the outdoors, cuisine, and the arts. So, Jim, welcome back.
Well, so good to be back. And before you click off out there, do not click off, because this federal tax landscape is a very important thing in the SaaS industry. Maybe not too sexy, but it's terribly critical that you get off on the right foot. Once you become successful, 40% of your net income, which will be your biggest expense item, is going to go to federal and state taxes. So you want to minimize this after all that hard work and effort. You don't want to, you know, send it off to the state and federal government. You want to do your fair share, but you don't want to overdo it. So the key is to get off on the right foot. And I'll give you a little carrot here. There is a code section, it's section 1202, which I'll throw out just for fun, that says that you can actually sell your business if you keep it in play for 5 years at a 0% income tax. Let me repeat that, 0%. There are limitations to it, there's technical concerns, but my point here is you need to get organized in the right way. I don't want to get into the details of section 1202, but I'll tell you what my preference is for the business that's getting started, is I'd like to start out as a limited liability company. So you typically have losses in the early years. So this allows you to get those losses flowing through to the owners to take a little bit of the bite out of the capital that you generally have to put up yourself. Then we shortly thereafter would probably convert into a C-Corp environment or a corporate environment. So we can do two things. One is we can take advantage of Section 1202 because you have to be a C-Corporation to do that. Secondly, there's a lot more flexibility in the C-Corp arena, and the private investment world prefers to work in that environment. And the next very important thing is the C-Corp environment, after we've gotten our legs, so to speak, a year or two into the business, allows you to set up stock option plans and equity compensation plans for your key employees. We have found that there's a group of people out there, particularly in this industry, that loves to do what they're doing, and they will come on board at a reduced compensation arrangement early if they've got some equity play or some equity equivalents. So they want to hit the home run along with you.
So Jim, can we take a few minutes to debrief some of those things you said? So, I mean, we loaded right into complex and some technical aspects there, and I want to break that down a little bit. You know, we talked about right in the beginning that, you know, you're probably going to turn around and hand about 40% of your income back to the government through your return. And so, you know, just quick, easy math. I'm thinking, right, $100,000 in net income, you're turning over $40,000 of that to the government, keeping your 60, right? So this is a big deal. I mean, multiply that by the millions, obviously the numbers become huge. And I understand tax strategy gets way more complex, and there's opportunities for credits and deductions and things like that. But I just wanted to make sure that, like, that's really what we're referencing here, the magnitude of amount of your earnings that you're actually shifting back from a tax standpoint.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the tax world just never gets simpler. It just gets more complex. And those folks that understand how the game's played, it's a giant congressional puzzle. And those of us that are in the business, play the puzzle the way it's been designed. And who wants to pay 40% when maybe we can pay 23%? And there's ways to get there. So it's something that you really need to spend some time with. And you, this is something you can't learn on your own, unfortunately. We talked in one of the episodes on seeking out help. You need to get help in the early stages of your structure. Even if you can't afford a big firm or a very talented firm at the beginning, it's worth the investment to get the structure set up properly. And then maybe move on later as you get more successful. But this is an area that it's a little bit like heart surgery. You just can't go it alone.
So you mentioned Section 1202, and let me take a little sidebar here for a minute. Although I'm a CPA and I've been licensed as a CPA, I don't actually file returns. I actually provide more of the consultancy side service, specifically in this industry. And so a lot of times when these complex tax questions come up, you know, I'll often lean on my partners, so my tax partners specifically. So you mentioning code section 1202 just is gibberish to me, to be completely honest. But again, this is why I reach out. I ask for help when some of these complex areas of, you know, the financial structure starts developing in conversations. But, you know, you're talking about, hey, in a section 1202 opportunity here, there's an opportunity to potentially exit with 0%, you know, impact. Can you spend just a few seconds expanding on that a little bit? And maybe what a SaaS company, let's say a SaaS company within 5 years of business, I know you said it had to be a 5-year marker, who's thinking about some sort of an exit strategy here, should be thinking about in relation to Section 1202?
Well, 1202 is designed, I guess, by Congress and policymakers in Washington to reward companies that start up and invest in the United States economy, hire employees. That's the basis for the concept. The basic tools are you have to be in business for 5 years. You can only get so big, and I don't want to get into the detailed requirements. And you can only shelter $10 million of the gain. So that's the bad news. But I don't think anybody's going to argue about the first $10 million of your gain being
taxed. I would. I'd argue about that.
But that doesn't mean. The point is that has to start at the beginning. You have to plan for 1202 at the beginning. And I've seen way too many situations where somebody didn't invest in the structure properly, says, I had no idea. Okay, let's just say you had a $10 million gain that you didn't need to pay $3.5 million in taxes had you been structured properly and made the investment in a good law firm, a good CPA firm to get you set up properly. So this is something that just you need outside help. That's all I can tell you.
Yeah, I think that's a great piece of information and really truly leans into the strategy of actual planning. Like planning for tax compliance, planning, or I guess like the key term that we hear all the time, right? Keep the end in mind. What is our exit strategy? What is our long-term plan? And obviously plans can change over time. But I think if we just enter walking that path of like, what are our goals? What are our strategies? What are our plans? We could prepare for some of this on the front end for sure.
I think most people go into business not knowing exactly what the end result's going to be, because they love what they're doing, they have a product, a software concept in mind, and they know it's something that's going to be utilized in the marketplace. So they don't really say, well, at X years I'm going to get out and make a bunch of money, because nobody knows that. But so you have to do the planning in advance so that you're structured. So when that time comes, and it happens, people that don't intend to sell out after 5 or 6 years get somebody from the outside world says, I want to put a bunch of money in, or I want to buy your company, and it's a crazy offer, and you say, oh my goodness, I thought I was going to do this for the rest of my life, but I'll get over it once you see the number that they're offering. I want to get back to one other thing in the structure. Is it's very important to recruit people in this business because they're highly technical. Most of them come from a pretty highly paid environment. You have to offer them something other than a salary. And oftentimes you don't have the capital to pay pay top dollar. But that doesn't mean you can't get top talent. There's been so many people across this country that have gotten ridiculously rich because they signed on with a company and they got some equity or some stock options that provided that on an exit, they were going to get a big chunk of money. And so it's a great recruiting tool. It says, if you come here, we'll pay you enough to you know, as best we can, but we're going to hit a home run and we're all going to get wealthy in the process. It's a very exciting thing, especially for a young person to say, I want to retire at 35 or 45, even though they probably really don't want to.
But can I get on that train?
The other kind of things, there's regular compliance stuff, which is kind of the nerdy stuff, the boring stuff, but you need to stay on top of all your tax filings and get a reputable CPA firm that's going to make sure that they keep you out of trouble, that you're filing everything timely. Because when the time comes for private equity to come in, or if you're ever going to think about selling, if you don't have an impeccable record of filing your tax returns and being compliant with all of these rules in due diligence, you're going to get sunk. So you need to do the stuff that's a little bit mundane on a very regular basis, because those clients that are clean, have done everything right, they sail through an exit process. Those people that have some bumps in the road, you take deep discounts, and sometimes they just fail. That nobody wants to buy a company that has too many problems in their past.
Yeah, risks, liabilities, unknown things that are out there that could backfire on a purchaser for sure. We've seen that in practice, and you know, you mentioned the stock options, and I think we've seen some incredibly successful clients and their related employees in this exact scenario. We've had a substantial capital investment or sale, and they're living completely different lives now, right?
They do, and I can't tell how many times this has happened to me. I sit here and I've made a great living. I have no regrets whatsoever. But over and over again, I see somebody 35 and they're cashing out for, you know, seven digits. And I'm like, that's more money than I made in the last 15 years. But that's part of the decision we make, I guess, in our business, is we like to be the consultants, and we really do celebrate when our clients are successful. But but I don't think our nature of our business is we don't like to take those big risks that some people do, and they get rewarded if they pick the right company to go to work for.
Yeah, for sure. The nature of a CPA, right? That being said, Jim, if taxes in general, I think, just scare people. I think even to the general population, even not in business, it's just something that's very complex, very unknown. And so I want to ask you a last question here. And what advice would you say puts a SaaS company or organization in the best position? What's the one or two key pieces of advice? I know you mentioned, hey, make sure you're actually doing your filings and having them done timely. But is there anything else that you would just say very high level, you know, is your number one biggest recommendation?
I think you have to make an investment in a law firm and a CPA firm and make sure your accounting structure is properly done. And sometimes that's really hard when you're stretched for capital. But let me put it this way. Spend as much money as you possibly can afford to get a very reputable CPA firm and a good seasoned law firm if you think you have some real potential here. And then let them take care of all those problems. Let them, the reputable firms are going to take all those problems off your plate. If you don't have that and you're struggling with a firm that doesn't have enough power, then you're always going to be wondering if things have been done properly. So best advice is buy the best service money, you know, that you can afford.
A little biased statement there, yeah. But that being said,
you know, it is, but
really focuses on working on instead of working in, right? Take those things that you don't need to be digging into day to day and spending your time on and really work on, like, the bigger strategy of your particular organization, your product, and your development.
And it sounds biased because we're in the business, but I live my whole life on outsourcing to the best people available.
Yeah, I guess that's true, right? You don't want me putting your roof on.
Right. You know, so I've always, you know, I want confidence and comfort, and people will pay for that. The smart people will pay for that.
Yeah. Well, Jim, I think that's fabulous advice. highly complex topic matter, obviously. And I want to thank you for, you know, coming back and joining us and you know, seasoning us a little bit there with some strategy, some just thoughts and points of reason, and appreciate your time. And I hope you'll consider joining us again in the future. But in the meantime, continue to join us as we accelerate your financial journey together. Have a great day.